Well, this is always the fascinating portion of the program as well. Linda Moulton Howe with us. Conversations with Linda. We take your phone calls and anything could happen. Okay, welcome back. Our final hour with Linda Moulton Howe, where we take your phone calls. We call it Conversations with Linda. Linda, that was an amazing story.
Well, I think it is important, and I am enthusiastic about these emails that I am getting. One man, I think you've got a CC on this, he said, "It is such a good show tonight, and I really need sleep, but I have to keep listening."
Can't sleep. And I got to tell you, normally you do one show, one segment. This time you did four.
Yeah.
Sometimes at the most you've done two. You really got into this one.
Yeah, because this needed, I thought, to have the context of this evolution of all of this behind why Nixon would have the reason to have this kind of knowledge. Also, I have an email, and this man may be right. He said, "I believe it's in the inside frame behind one of the many paintings that are hung in the Oval Office or some other place. They are never taken down for any reason or moved. They are almost considered sacred. I will bet you a lunch that when it's disclosed, it's in a painting."
Interesting.
That is a very interesting
idea. It sure
is.
And only Kissinger knows. So if you had an opportunity to interview Henry Kissinger about just things, the way he handled Vietnam and everything else, his reaction to what's happening in North Korea, would you ask him this question, "Where's this letter?"
Oh, I wouldn't hesitate to ask him. But he is not the only one now. Remember, Merritt knows, and Merritt has made sure that there is the safety deposit box that has the information, and that other people, because he is concerned that he will pass soon. And so he is making sure that there are about, as far as I know, there are at least three other people besides him and Nixon, or Kissinger, who know exactly what Nixon told Merritt.
Do you remember the story of Nixon and his buddy Jackie Gleason, the comedian? And
yes,
he took him to Homestead Air Force Base in Florida.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Apparently showed him an extraterrestrial. Is that where this one is being held?
Well, I know that story from, what was it? It was Gleason's second wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one who told somebody, and it got picked up, and he was upset, and everybody was upset. But I think because there was a lot of anger, that it probably was absolutely true. Now, Homestead is what was reported from the ex-wife, or the wife at the time, saying that Gleason was picked up by Nixon and taken, and they used Homestead. I have been told, when I was working in Los Angeles producing Sightings, the special, I met somebody who knew Gleason and who told me that the actual location, so we can just put this out here as another data point because it did come from somebody who would have more inside information. There's so many deflections when it comes to which military base or site. Always scrambling dates and scrambling locations is part of counterintelligence. So what I'm sharing now was told to me was what really happened without me having proof. And it was that it is Eglin, and that it was Eglin Air Force Base, and that underground, the way man told me in L.A. was, he said, it is, imagine, Linda, if Disney wanted to do a sort of museum place that the public could go to take a look at what we know about aliens and craft and artifacts. He said they have built something like a Disney museum underground, and he said there are half a dozen different beings that are preserved in vertical, transparent tubes on walls. Now, I've also heard that there are transparent tubes with something that preserves bodies at Area 51 and possibly Norton Air Force Base, which is allegedly closed, but may still serve like a museum, an archive of artifacts, craft, and bodies. And for people who haven't been exposed to this, they might find these concepts unusual. But I've been exposed to the idea of our having preserved museum-like archives since the 1980s. So I'm not surprised by this at all. And I think that the Gleason story is probably correct in the big outline. And the issue is, was it really Homestead or was it really Eglin?
Good point. Now we go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to Tony in Brooklyn, New York to start. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Listen, this is a very important call.
All right.
The federal government has a genome program where people are being cloned without their permission or authority to be cloned. And in Brooklyn, New York, at the Maimonides Hospital Research Building, that's on 49th Street between 9th and 10th Avenue, which is the building with the parking lot on the 49th Street side, they're cloning people. And they've been doing it, from my knowledge, from 2013. And across the street from where I am, Maimonides has an additional basement laboratory at 4422 9th Avenue, where
and
they've been doing it since the middle
proof?
Of May 2013. And
what is your proof of cloning?
Because my neighbors were taken away, May 28, 2013, by a man named Vladimir Dubrovnik, who was a former CIA agent who got kicked out for being a rogue. And then years later, he went to work for the Russians. And when Vladimir Putin came to power, he made a clone of Putin. And Putin got wind of it and had the clone killed off. And I don't know what other crazy things he did in Russia, but Putin had him committed. And he was able to escape because his second wife, Sylvia, his mother, and at least one of his aunts, are all molecular biologists, and they made a clone of him, and the clone is in the mental institution in Russia. And this guy came to my neighborhood in approximately July of 2012, and he illegally took over somebody's house. He got the people. I don't know if he killed them or put them in a camp, but what's bad is the clones are occupying the houses and apartments of the people that have been abducted. And the abductees from Brooklyn and Staten Island, New York, are taken into Fort Wadsworth. And they kept in the modular houses along Father.
So what do you think the purpose is of cloning these people, Tony?
The Illuminati is doing it. And what's bad is all under Obama converted the 66 FEMA camps throughout the United States into reassignment centers, like during World War II, what Hitler did to the Jews and the 6 million Jews and 9 million others. And my neighbors were taken May 28, 2013, between 9 and 9:30 in the morning. The house is being used as a safe house for these clones.
All right. Well, Linda, that's going to take a lot of checking.
I think we should try another subject.
Yeah, I think we should, too. Let's go next to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thank you for taking my call, George. And Linda, you are doing magnificent research at Earth Files.
Thank
you. Truly appreciated. Thank you. My question, well, a comment first, and then a question, Linda, if I may.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill once said that the truth is so precious that it must be protected by a bodyguard of lies, a bodyguard of lies. And in the last few months, Stephen Greer, a trauma surgeon and also interested in promoting disclosure, was interviewed on Coast, and he made an amazing statement. He said that he visited a black ops, black budget funded laboratory, secret laboratory, in which extraterrestrial biotechnology was being applied to, as he put it specifically, he said he witnessed rejuvenation of severed limbs to human beings and to animals at this laboratory. And as a trauma surgeon, he was very impressed by that and felt that this information should be released to the world. But of course, it's black budget. And he stated this on Coast. I've often wondered whether the real secret of keeping the alien presence, the extraterrestrial present, absolutely above top secret is not extraterrestrial hardwares. You know, like you interviewed Philip Corso, who worked under, you know, General Trudeau to seed extraterrestrial hardware artifacts to American corporations. But given the Stephen Greer revelation, I wonder if the true secret is extraterrestrial biotechnology, which could facilitate extremely radical rejuvenation, regeneration, more than cosmetic, more than stem cells, perhaps even biological immortality. Who knows? Do the extraterrestrials die, or can they facilitate extremely long lifetimes, regenerate limbs, as Stephen Greer said?
In my 1998 book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, I did the two-volume book over 8 years, from 1990 to 1998. And in Glimpses Volume 2, there is a very large section with half a dozen people in the human abduction syndrome who all experienced the same type of technology, in which they are shown tubes in which there are what appear to be adult aliens or adult humans, a whole variety, that are preserved in light that is emanating from the top and the bottom of these cylinders. And that when I read the SERPO transcript of the alleged briefing for Ronald Reagan at Camp David in March of 1981, the CIA, NSA, DIA handlers and caretakers talking with Reagan explain that there are five types that the government is very familiar with. The top of the list is the extraterrestrial biological entity, defined as having the pear-shaped head. It's a very different head from the ones with the pointed chins. The pear-shaped head and has four fingers, and says to Reagan that that group, we'll call them a prime intelligence, that they are responsible for creating genetically through gene manipulation the next two on the list, which are arkaloids and quadloids. They define the arkaloids as having large noses, vertical pupilled eyes, domed heads, wearing ropey headdresses, and carrying translators that look like rods with a coil around them. And that the Ebens made these for a very specific assignment territorially in the Milky Way galaxy. The third are described as quadloids that are said to be hybrids between an insect-preying mantis and lizards, a reptilian, and that they are that they have been made and created to be overseers of life-seeding projects in solar systems and need to be able to survive as one mental mind project for a few billion years. All of this seems incomprehensible to us. But the point I'm making is, if that transcript of the presentation to Reagan about five types, of which three out of the five are related to one prime intelligence that mixes and matches genes and makes clones and hybrids and androids and cyborgs, then it probably means that advanced intelligences in this universe are extremely skilled with what is also said in the Reagan briefing. It's called rapid cycle cloning. And the rapid cycle cloning specifically is defined as not needing any infant stage, that cells can be taken, put into this process, and that an adult body is the result and can be sustained in these tubes in the light for as long as needed. Now, when my book, The Glimpses Volume 2, came out in 1998, we're at 2018, so this is 20 years ago when that book first appeared.
And it's still apropos today.
It is absolutely more relevant today than ever. But what is interesting to me is that the single most extraordinary discussion that I have ever had with a human being on this planet, ever, was a man who sought me out in December of 1999 through a man who worked for the World Bank. And the World Bank guy knew me through a conference and called and said that a colleague of his was retiring from the Defense Intelligence Agency after 23 years of monitoring and analyzing the geopolitical territorial conflict of three competing extraterrestrial civilizations in our solar system and on this planet and in the Milky Way galaxy. And we ended up, all three of us had to travel, went to a very specific location that was selected by this DIA retiree. And we talked for 7 hours. I listened for most of that time.
That's pretty intense, isn't it?
It was astonishing. And it relates, in fact, if we're, I don't know if we're coming up to a break.
We've got 2 minutes.
Okay, two minutes. In the whole reason that he wanted to see me, as he said, I thought that the rapid cycle cloning was our government's greatest secret. No one would ever know anything about it. We were so compartmentalized in the DIA. He said, and then I get a phone call from somebody who says, you've got to see this new book by Linda Moulton Howe, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2. And he said, I get your book, and I open it up, and you have 100 pages. You have maps, illustrations, photographs of everything that I thought no one would ever see. And I said, sir, these all come from people in the human abduction syndrome. And he said, yeah, but we are told that nobody is supposed to be abducted unless they're on a list with the government. And I said, do you really think that we are dealing with advanced intelligences that are going to make border, we are not going to abduct any people because the government of the United States says that we can't? And he laughed, and he said, I understand your point, but he said, until I opened up your book, he said, your book filled in huge gaps for me because we are so compartmentalized inside of our agency.
We're going to come back and take final phone calls with Linda in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast with Linda Moulton Howe and Conversations with Linda. We'll take your calls. Let's go to Blair in Sedona, Arizona. Welcome to the show. Hi, Blair.
Thank you very much, George. And Linda, first off, may calmness and serenity be yours amidst all the chaos.
Thank you very much.
Sure. I watched your two presentations at the Conscious Life Expo last month, and you talked about killer robots,
right.
Autonomous killer robots being designed. And you basically said we got to put a clamp down on this kind of production because it's a threat to human existence.
Well, Elon Musk.
But your second talk was sort of a dichotomy, Linda, at least in my mind, because you talked about a Navy SEAL, Sam, who witnessed with his men 9 foot tall, what looked like full body armored creatures manifesting out of solid rock.
Right.
Yet the thing that caught me, they were not debriefed afterwards. And I am a Navy veteran, as George is, and that was interesting. And they talk, you talk about that so-called secret war that came to your attention in 1992. So when I hear both sides of a pro and con, that's what I got from you, that was yay, killer robots to protect us from these alien creatures at your second talk. But the first talk, you said it's a threat to human existence. I'd like to hear your comment on that, please.
No, I did not intend any such crossover. The first presentation is provoked by the several videos that I have seen from Elon Musk, supported by Gates and by others, even Stephen Hawking, about the fact that the rapidity with which we are moving toward artificial intelligence that will start replacing humans in so many categories of work in the next 12 years. They're estimating that there could be 20% of truck drivers would be replaced by AI entirely, and a whole long list. And that the AI presentation is basically fleshing out what Elon Musk talked about as this being an existential threat. The existential threat is in several facets. Explained that I had been given information in August that in a large robotic company in Japan that had a contract to create military robots for military application, that something happened and that four of the robots went rogue and ended up killing people in the robotics laboratory. And that when I got the information, they said, you're never going to hear about this outside of the company. This person knows because of the work that they do. And he said, this is why Elon Musk and others are so concerned. If we are going to rapidly, within another decade, have artificial intelligence that is replacing humans in a variety of tasks, when does it change that the robot or the android or the cyborg has no incentive to keep deferring to the human? When does the robot, cyborg, or android change as the apparently these military robots did in August in Japan and kill the humans? For reasons that are not comprehensible, but that would be consistent with high-end artificial programming in which autonomous decisions about threats, especially something being made for a military context, would turn on their maker, the humans. Okay, so that's the artificial intelligence existential threat presentation. The other one about whistleblowers having to do with the fact that people in military contexts in the Middle East, for a long time I have been getting whistleblower reports for at least 13, 14 years about encounters with non-human entities in Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Eritrea, and it's very eerie because it happens, the encounter occurs, but there's no videotape, no photographs, and there's no understanding of what's happening.
Let's go to Dan in Alaska, west of the Rockies. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Yeah, George, how you doing?
Good.
Very good show tonight. I was going to ask about the Jackie Gleason, Richard Nixon thing, but I heard the Linda already talk about that, so that explains that. I want to know about El Dulce and if she knows anything about the Gaeta Treaty with President Eisenhower, or ex-president at the time, but he met with aliens twice in 1952, I believe it was. And that was the start of this whole thing, see, this trade-off of human beings for the technology.
Had you ever heard of that, Linda?
There is a lot to unpack in this gentleman's question and statements. And the first thing is that in terms of some kind of communication with non-humans, I don't know that there's ever been any proof that Dwight D. Eisenhower was the first authority figure to have some kind of communication, and that the murkiness around what exactly happened, the closest that I've ever seen anything that would even come into the question of the pressure of fact is that I think Grant Cameron at Presidential UFO was able to get the White House log that showed that Dwight D. Eisenhower was supposed to have gone for a dentist appointment on a day and maybe stay over for a night because of a dentist appointment, and that Grant did a presentation saying this might have been the time that he flew to whether it was Area 51 or Tonopah or wherever it was in order to have some kind of a meeting. But I don't know of any proof. There's lots of speculation. There are lots of stories. And I really, really try to separate the wheat from the chaff. And I prefer to talk about on national radio material that at least has some substance. The Eisenhower having met with a blonde or a gray or all kinds of things has been out there in many, many variations for at least 35 years. So I don't know what the truth is.
Yeah, it has definitely been out there. Next up, let's go to Doug in Sayreville, New Jersey. Hi, Doug. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening. How are you tonight?
Okay, sir? Douglas, thank you.
I'm glad to hear that. Yes, Linda, it's an honor to speak with you. I've been watching and listening to you for years, starting back from the Bigfoot to the cattle mutilations
to
the UFOs and the whole nine yards. It's a great show this evening. I'm surprised nobody mentioned this or called in or anything, or if maybe I was hearing things, but I could have sworn today I heard on the radio while I was tinkering around, I had the radio on and the news came on, and they had mentioned something about Nixon's time capsule, and I don't know if it was anniversary or whatnot. I really wasn't paying much attention, but in the background I could hear them saying that it was located at one of the presidential libraries, and they were going to go ahead and open it up, and they were going to have a ceremony with a bunch of school kids around, and they were also going to have some people who were there when they were children when it was placed into the ground.
Well, what would you have been listening to?
It was a New York station. That's all I could tell you for sure. It was talk radio. And it was on in the afternoon around 3.
Well, I'm not sure that it is this White House letter time capsule. There are something like 40 some time capsule events that there's a list. You can Google it, of time capsules to be opened between now and 2080 or something. And so every so often, there are time capsules that were put in bank corners and things that come about, and that may or may not explain what you heard tonight.
Well, also, though, there's a website called the Daily Galaxy that has reported on this story with you, Linda, and it's very possible that it's being picked up by places.
Yeah. Well, that may be so, and what we're waiting for, though, is the official invitation to go back to the White House and be there as witnesses to the finding and reading of the letter. That's what we would all like to see. There's four or five of us that are willing to do that.
Let's go to Brandon in Long Island, New York, on the wild card line. Hi, Brandon. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I want to say good morning from Garden City. First encounter with Nixon was at the base of the podium when he was talking at Roosevelt Field, right where Lindbergh took off. He pointed me out. Next, I see him. He gives me a nod with Kissinger when Casey's being loaded out after his death here in Roslyn, New York. Bottom line is I worked for Group 7. Parent company was Geothermal Kinetics. On the board was Ruckelshaus Emmenegger. We were doing a Project Moon Dust retrieval at Corona down near Casa Grande, base of Mount Graham.
Sure. You were in Project Moon Dust?
Well, I was never told, you know, need to know, basically, Linda. We spoke before about core ejections of FLUX energies, core flux ejections, and George, you and I spoke about 5 years ago about a walk on the moon with Stryker, and I was Brandon of Long Island then.
Right,
so the
right.
Bottom line is that I'd like to leave my personal information with your contact people there, George. And
okay.
See if I can't come back.
And everybody listening, you can email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And put March to Coast in the subject line. I will open up every one of those. And to remember that, just think of a reporter who files news about the Earth. So I'm always reachable at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And I would very much like a follow-up to learn what you have learned or know about moon dust.
Well, you get a lot of tips through the show and through our conversations with Linda, don't you?
Yes, I do. And it's very helpful. They're coming in now more than ever before. There is a certain frustration level of people who have been in the military and in intelligence, and they are as frustrated in some ways as I and others that the truth is still at bay. When they know that we're not alone in this universe, they know tremendous complexities about what has been happening on this planet with other intelligences and how absurd it is that we still don't have this out as a global truth. And that is what keeps me going in my work.
Eric is a first-time caller in Arizona. Go ahead, Eric. Let's get you in real quickly.
Yeah, I'll make it brief. I just want to acknowledge first Daniel, the dark journalist, for his excellent work. I've had the pleasure of meeting Linda, and I met you, George, recently at the Conscious Life Expo, and I find you guys both to be very kind, generous, and George, you got a great sense of humor also, by the way.
All right, thanks, Eric.
And a fine singer. Moving to the point, Project Moondust, this is exactly what I wanted to talk about. Is Clifford Stone still alive? And the reason why I ask this is I'm trying to figure out who would have been the interfacer that would have been able to translate that information that E.T. had given and that eventually Nixon got a hold of. And I'm thinking maybe Clifford Stone might be the missing link. If he's still alive, maybe we can talk to him because he was involved in Project Moondust. He was the guy, as you guys know, was the gentleman that was able to let
But that formula, as I understand it, this is an alien formula, and that however it is written or whoever wrote it, that it was to Merritt's eye, didn't even have numbers and didn't have letters, that it was a formula entirely of symbols that he didn't recognize.
I think Stone could still be alive, but he's way up there in age. Linda?
I think he is still alive.
Yeah, I still think he is. I think he is, too. We've only got a minute left. What's new with you, Linda? Where are you going these days?
Let's see. The next trip is I leave in 2 weeks to go down to Phoenix for a MUFON Phoenix gathering where I'm going to be speaking, and I'm going to be talking about the bismuth, magnesium, zinc. We keep learning more material. I keep getting more and more information. I'm telling you, this is also something that is truly, it was never a human-made layered metal. This is really something, and that's what I'm going to be presenting in Phoenix at Phoenix MUFON at the museum there. The second weekend in, it's next weekend.
Well, it's coming up fast. Are you going to be at Contact in the Desert?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's going to be in Indian Wells now.
Yeah, I hope it will be really perhaps cooler and nicer than it was before.
I think it will. It's going to be in a hotel this time. Linda, thanks for being on the program. Appreciate it. Great job. And, of course, Linda will be back with us the end of March, the last Thursday. Two programs with Linda this month. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.